Calling case 88007 regarding the matter of NRR and NIR. Are the parties ready to proceed? All right. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
3 minutes, please. Thank you. Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Stephanie Richter, and I represent the Clark County Department of Family Services in this matter. The Clark County Department of Family Services asserts that the court's order to pay a licensed foster parent to relocate in the amount of $1,000 is a violation of the separation of powers doctrine. The provision of services provided or financed by the Clark County Department of Family Services is an executive function that should not be impinged on by the judiciary. In this case, the $1,000 in this order would come from the agency's appropriation. It is not federally reimbursable, and therefore either from the Clark County Commission or from the state legislature. Decisions as to how to provide services and spend its appropriation are committed to the discretion of the department. Although the department is statutorily obligated to make reasonable efforts towards reunification, the means of fulfilling that obligation should be within the department's discretion and is subject to the review of the court under NRS 432B to make a finding of reasonable efforts at least every 12 months. I'm relying on section 5 in the statute. I'm looking at the section regarding the annual review and the semi-annual review, 580 and 590, that states that the court must make reasonable efforts.
And you have 432.
Correct. That deals with the reasonable efforts of the agency as well. That is as well. It states that the court is to review the reason.
You're looking at?
Correct. I am looking at that section as well. It gives the court the authority to determine the reasonable efforts of the department. It does not give the court the authority to order the department to do anything. It's able to make a finding of a lack of reasonable efforts, which would therefore affect the agency's funding.
Can't hear anything, Jason.
Correct. Correct. And when we look at the statute in whole, NRS 432B 560 provides a way for the court to order parties. Particularly the child, the parent, the guardian, to do something or to refrain from something. Notably, nowhere in Section 432B does the statute give the authority to the court to order the agency to affirmatively do or refrain from something.
I don't think your mic's on.
Section 560. Yes.
But you also said.
You should, Elizabeth, the text.
So in section 590 at the annual review, it says that the court has to review the permanent placement of the child as well as make a determination of reasonable efforts.
Well, was this the annual review?
This was not the annual review. This was a...
That statute of law.
It was basically in response to the court's assertion that it was making a finding under 550, and which also relates to 580 and 590. The actual hearing was under section 5903. It was an initial termination of parental rights motion noticed by the state. However, the court in its decision on the motion to reconsideration referred back to 550 and 590 and made a reference to the need to determine reasonable efforts. And so we addressed that in our response. But the Family Services assertion is this should not have even come up at that hearing, as it was a limited hearing.
I understand that. I just want to understand for analytical purposes, what was this hearing being conducted under and which of these statutes applies in your estimation?
It was being conducted under 5903, under the initial termination of parental rights motion, which is a limited hearing which allows the parent to respond to the motion and either enter a denial or request a mediation. The court at the end of that hearing said, are there any other matters that I should entertain today? And it opened it up, opened the hearing up to other things. And the CAP attorney made an unrelated oral request. And in fact, in the transcript, it indicates that there was a hearing 2 days later or 3 days later on Thursday. And she said, should I reserve this for the hearing on Thursday or should I bring it up today? And the state responded by saying, this is not appropriate for this hearing. We're asking that either a motion be filed or that the matter be briefed because we're not prepared to respond today, and the court proceeded anyways.
Since that time, there was a motion for reconsideration where it was fully briefed and argued, correct?
Correct. There was a motion for reconsideration pursuant to Section 570 and prior decisions of this court and similar arguments where writs have been dismissed because not all remedies were exhausted. And 570 allows for a revocation of the court's prior order. And it was not clear at the initial hearing what statutory authority the court was using to make its order. The order does not cite to anything in NRS 432B. So in an abundance of caution to ensure that all remedies were used prior to filing the writ, we filed a motion for reconsideration. Because if the court was referring to either of the sections listed in 570, we could have had the writ dismissed for failure to exhaust all remedies. And so I don't believe that overcomes the due process issue because it was something that was required in the department's estimation to be here today. Otherwise, we would have not had a remedy and we could have risked dismissal of the writ. With regards to this, the department believes that the agency is responsible for administering a complex program for the protection of children. It has a finite budget. Unfortunately, the needs of the community are much larger than the budget allows, and so they have to make decisions on what they can afford and not afford. And in this case, they made a reasonable decision not to spend money to relocate a licensed foster parent that was already receiving a payment of over $1,600 a month and where they'd already previously paid her rent in the amount of $3,000 when she was unlicensed. The department believes that once the child is in the agency's custody, the court cannot unduly interfere with the agency's discretion and that they properly exercise the discretion in this case in denying the request. And that request was, the denial was communicated timely to the CAP attorney, who did not file a motion even though she had several days to do so, did not use the mechanism to get a motion on an order shortening time, and chose instead to bring it up and essentially practice trial by ambush at the end of an unrelated hearing. With regards to this case, the department also believes that the court is limited to reviewing the decision-making power and the provision of services as stated earlier for reasonableness under NRS 432B. Even if the court is looking at the reasonableness of the agency's decision in this case, it is eminently reasonable to spend its funds elsewhere and to make the determination not to expend the $1,000. I would also like to note that the request originally was for a much larger amount in the amount of $5,000, and the court chose to lower it to what it considered an unobjectionable amount to the agency, and the agency maintains that any amount and any payment in this case would be objectionable to them.
Okay, so if you were writing a decision in this case that was favorable to your side and you had to set up the statute that we're looking at that you say gives you this discretion in your expenditures and the services you provide, what would you say?
I would say partially to 432B.2185 that says an agency which provides child welfare services that gets a grant may use the money allocated for any cost of providing child welfare services without restriction, and that we're not required to return any of the money. I would read that in conjunction with the statute that says that the court can make a reasonable efforts determination, and I would combine that with the fact that there is nothing in the statute that allows the court to order the agency to affirmatively do anything, which read in conjunction with 560 that allows the court to order other parties to undertake or refrain from actions, means that you cannot read the ability to order the agency to do something, because if the legislature intended that, the agency would have been listed there. And I think it's particularly in light of 570 or 560, because that says that the court can order the child, a parent of the child, or the guardian to undergo treatment or refrain from actions but the agency is not included in there. And there is nothing, the court can make placements, notably under 550, which the district court used. The court is able to order a placement, but it doesn't say that the court is able to order the agency to do anything in relation to that placement.
Does the fact that this occurred post-licensure affect this analysis?
I don't believe so. I believe that the agency would have the discretion pre or post-licensure to make that expenditure. And the agency often does make expenditures in its discretion, both pre and post-licensure, to assist foster parents.
And it did in this case.
It did in this case. It previously paid rent for 2 months in the amount of $3,000 for the family, as well as assisted with some other services.
And to what statute were those expenditures authorized and made?
They were not pursuant to statute. They were made by the agency at the request of the family, an agency management review.
I understand that, but is there a statutory authority?
It's under 2185 that the agency may use the money allocated for any costs of providing child welfare services without restriction. So they use that blanket authority to be able to make discretionary funds to assist licensed and unlicensed relative care providers. But typically the department does have a policy where they're licensed and they're receiving a monthly payment that they will not pay for rent, relocation, because that is compensated for in the monthly payment, which in this case was over $1,600 a month for the family.
Do you attach any significance to 432B393 subparagraph 2? In this case,
I don't, because the in this case the hearing was under 5903.
Okay.
There was no report received under 550 or under 393 regarding the agency's reasonable efforts. There was no fact finding done. It was simply a request and speaking to the care provider, but it was not a formal reasonable efforts hearing. The court, again, did not receive any report from the agency, did not review any report from the agency in advance, did not even conduct an evidentiary hearing or do a full fact finding.
What if they had requested the initial rent payments before they were foster approved and able to get foster payments? Could they have requested the court to ask your agency to direct your agency to make those payments?
They could have, and the department would have objected to that as well as being in the agency's discretion. It is something that they do on a discretionary basis as a practice because it's in the child's best interest to be placed with relatives or other care providers who they are familiar with, and to preserve placements. If there's no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
I don't, thank you.
All right, Justice Perriguer, do you have anything?
Nope, all good.
All right, thank you, Mr. Wiseman.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. There are a number of ways this matter could be phrased technically, but fundamentally it comes down to two questions. First, whether the court had the ability under these circumstances to hear the matter at all. And second, whether under these circumstances the court had the ability to order measures be taken for the safety of the children, even if those measures required that the department make expenditures of its own fund. I would respectfully submit that both as a matter of law and policy, the answer to both of those questions is yes. Now, my esteemed friend spent most of her time discussing the appropriateness of the order in terms of the court's authority to make the order in the first place. In other words, the court's authority to order the department to expend its own funds. She spends much of her time discussing the fact that there is no statute clearly authorizing the court to make such a determination. However, courts have traditional authority to compel the performance of acts which law requires or control arbitrary and capricious exercises of discretion by an agency. The agencies, the department's actions are reviewable by the court. Now, the district court never directly made a finding that the agency's actions were arbitrary or capricious. However, it is writ large in the district court's determination. This was necessary for the safety of the child. It was important that these funds be provided to the guardian, who was relatively young, 21 years old at the time, in order that the guardian could protect the child. Moreover, while there was direct arguments that it does not apply, I would respectfully submit that 432B.3934 at least implicitly gives the district court authority to review such matters. It has already been determined that the district court, at least under appropriate circumstances, can review the department's actions for reasonable efforts. 432B.3934 provides guidance on what is considered reasonable. As part of that, it states that, the agency should provide child welfare services to children with legal custody of a child, and take actions arranging appropriate, accessible, and available services that are designed to improve the ability of a family to provide a safe and stable home for each child in the family. That is exactly what the court's order does. It ensures that the agency was providing the necessary funds for this family to...
Well, the statute says services. And so this is an appropriation. This is the court having them appropriate money for a particular purpose. So where's the authority for that?
Your Honor, I would suggest that while it refers to services, services is written broadly. And services can and does frequently involve the direct appropriation of money. Additionally, I would respectfully submit that that falls under the general and inherent authority of a court to review the agency's actions for an abuse of discretion.
Well, doesn't the agency have a policy that they do not assist with relocation expenses?
Yes, Your Honor. And
policy. It's not just for this particular case.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. However, that is part of the reason that the district court, instead of granting an order for the $5,000 in relocation expenses that was requested, instead ordered a $1,000 payment for rental purposes. Now, money, of course, is fungible, and there's no question that the intention was to assist in this relocation.
But just to be clear, the statutory authority that you rely on for this court to direct it, setting aside the arbitrary and capricious, is 393 subparent 4. Is there any other statute? What about 550?
Your Honor.
I mean, these statutes imbue the agency with a wide breadth of discretion, all of them. Excuse me.
Yes, 432B 550 is clearly relevant, though I do contend that 393 is the more significant one. Under 550, particularly subsection 1A, the court may issue such conditions, may authorize the actions under such, upon such conditions as the court may prescribe. While that does not directly refer to appropriations or even services, it is very broad language, giving the court very broad authority, as it should. Courts are meant to review executive agencies' actions. They are meant to rein in arbitrary and capricious actions. They are even meant to rein in improper uses of discretion, which may, under some circumstances, be a lower standard. Courts have always had this in their inherent authority, and they should. But that inherent authority here is supplemented by the legislative grant of authority in the statutes. Now, I have to acknowledge those grants do not, the legislative grants do not directly state that the court may order an appropriation of funds. However, In both cases, they use very broad language. And in 432B, 3934 in particular, they discuss steps to ensure the safety of the child. That is precisely what the district court was doing. Now, turning to the question of whether the district court was procedurally correct in reviewing, in considering this matter at the time it did, my esteemed friend in the initial moving papers, the initial writ petition, argues that it is a violation of due process. I very respectfully can.
I want to pause before you get there, because the more significant issue, I think, is the authority of the court to direct this payment. And you've identified 393 subparent 4 and 550. The court looks like she relied on 550. But you concede that those statutes don't, in fact, directly address this payment. And it's of concern to me because that does raise a separation of powers issue with respect to this court directing an agency that has been given funds that are finite and has policy in place that they're not going to help with. You know, they can't get into relocating everybody because of the finite resources available. It strikes me, if to credit that argument, we walk right into a separation of powers issue, which I'd like to hear your thoughts on.
Certainly, Your Honor. Now, it is true that there is a separation of power issues here. However, that only goes so far. Courts have always had the inherent authority to review other agencies for abuse of discretion, even without a legislative grant. And while I do acknowledge, as you stated, that the statutes I'm relying upon do not directly authorize an appropriation, it is my contention that they are written using broad language and meant to be read broadly, particularly when a different reading, a more narrow reading, would abrogate the court's traditional ability to review agencies for an abuse of discretion. And my esteemed friend repeatedly pointed out they have the discretion to make this payment if they wanted to. And that's correct. They do. They don't need a court to direct them. But since they have discretion to make the payment, it is also appropriate for a court to review that for an abuse of discretion. And that is consistent with a broad reading of these statutory grants, especially the statutory grant in 432B, 3934, which discusses the review for reasonable efforts and discusses services to ensure a safe and stable home for each child in the family. Now, I have to acknowledge I'm urging a broad reading of this language, but I believe the broad reading is the appropriate one. Under these circumstances, it appears to be the legislative intent, and to read otherwise limits the court's ability to review matters for an abuse of discretion. That further supports a broad reading of these statutes. And finally, just as a matter of sheer policy, this court reviewed it saying that there was a possible emergent situation, that urgent action was needed, and that this particular action was needed. Courts can and should be able to make such a determination. And to the extent that this may arguably impinge on a executive body's determination, it is the kind of impingement that courts have always made, reviewing for abuse of discretion and complying with the statutes that in this particular case say that the agency should be working towards a safe and stable home for each child in the family.
Do you have any cases that support what you just said in the specific context of a state court directing a Department of Family Services or its analog in another state to provide money in this service context? It looks like most of the cases go the other way, mainly under statutory interpretation and the breadth of reasonable discretion that's reposed.
No, Your Honor, I was unable to find a case that directly authorized such a payment. There are cases from other states that do forbid it. However, as you alluded to, those cases, to the best of my knowledge, all of them, and certainly everyone that was cited, turned on that state's statutory interpretation. They are irrelevant to Nevada's statutory interpretation. Under Nevada's laws, the court is able to review the matter to ensure that the agency is taking reasonable steps, and part of those reasonable steps are to determine a safe and stable home for each child and the family. They are also to authorize such conditions as the court deems necessary. Here, that's the exact analysis the court did. It found that in order to ensure the safety of these children, relocation and financing to permit that was essential. And it did so emphasizing the safety of the children, doing a detailed analysis of the facts.
How was the agency's determination arbitrary and capricious?
Your Honor, it's not... Well, excuse me. First, I would like to very respectfully suggest that it does not necessarily need to be arbitrary and capricious, and abuse of discretion is sufficient for the court to make an order. However, even if it were reviewed under an arbitrary and capricious standard, the agency, both before and at the hearing, was provided reasons why this move was needed for the safety of the children. Why the children, these particular children, were in imminent danger if action wasn't taken, if they were not relocated, primarily focusing on the fact that biological parents had at one point broken into the property and that they wanted to relocate to a place where the biological parents would not know their location. There was also some discussion of bullying happened to these children right there. And because of that, the relocation was necessary. Denying the ability to relocate and for a low...
Well, we didn't deny the ability to relocate. We're not providing, it seems if there was something that was, we'll strike that. There wasn't, they didn't have a place yet in mind. Mm-hmm. The ask was for $5,000 and the court said, we'll give $1,000. They're receiving services, I'm sorry, they're receiving $1,600 a month. And so what was the vision for the $1,000? That it goes to the guardian, that it goes to the foster family, that it goes to a rental placement, that it's a down payment. Like what's the theory for the court to order the agency to give $1,000 to a person in this context?
Your Honor, the reasoning for why it was $1,000 specifically was not discussed in depth by the court, other than the fact that it was the court's effort to reach a reasonable compromise and be sufficient to arrange the move. Now, you suggested that the ability to move was not denied. And that is in a technical sense true. No one was stopping them from moving. But when you're talking about a low means family and a paternal aunt who was the caregiver was young, merely 21, the grandmother was receiving food stamps. This was a low-means family. Lacking the resources is tantamount to being prevented from moving.
Finding that the $1,000 can have them move in any event. Like, it, when I was going over the orders, it felt like a reimbursement to some extent for rent. The court's order was very, I felt, light on the whys. So the compromise... Yeah, tell me how the court gets there factually and how you support that.
Okay. I see I'm out of time. May I answer?
Please.
All right, thank you. You're correct. The court's order, while very detailed in other circumstances, does not go into a lot of detail as to the amount. Other than that was what the court determined was a reasonable amount. Now, with that said, this was a learned judge having listened to extensive testimony when it made the final order. It had every piece of information it could possibly ask for to make that decision. And it exercised its discretion, the court's discretion, in reaching that number. But the written order is light on the discussion as to how it arrived at that number, though not at all light into the reasoning for why it was necessary.
Well, my colleague had raised the, you know, the separation of powers issue. I mean, there's a reason why we don't get blank checks, you know, and there's discretion given to the agency because do you foresee a problem if each individual court can write checks? I mean, I don't know how many foster, you know, I'm sure people are in a lot of dire circumstances and situations. We don't have the whole playing field. We don't have the bank account. We don't have the checkbook. We don't have the perspective that the people who have to manage the appropriation have. Are those things that we should be concerned with?
Absolutely. Those are factors. And there is a reason that the agency itself is first and foremost making the decisions on its budget. However, that should not strip courts of their ability in specific circumstances to determine that there is an actual need that must be addressed. And that's precisely what the court did here and what courts should be able to do more broadly. They should be able to look at a specific situation before them and say, this must be addressed. And in this particular case, the court reached that decision very wisely after considering matters of affirmative safety that were specific to this child. And the court, at least in the terms of being a step removed, may be better positioned to do those kinds of analysis in an adversarial proceeding than the agency itself can be.
Well, let me ask just one more question. Concise, I know we're over and I'll round you up. Could the court have just said to the agency, assist in relocation? Because the court, the agency has all kinds of quivers, different tools in their toolbox that could have assisted with relocation short of a financial order. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. I believe the court should have done that. I believe that fits inherently, could have done that. And I believe that fits well within its inherent authority and the guidance under the statutes. However, I do not believe that the court is limited to doing that. When a court, after receiving all evidence and making an informed decision, feels the need to make a more specific order, that seems to be well within its inherent authority.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Madam Clerk, will you give Ms. Richter 3 minutes, please? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. My colleague mentions Section 393 providing the court with authority to make this order. Section 393 provides the court with guidance as to what a reasonable effort is in making the determination under the statute as to whether the agency has made reasonable efforts. It defines what a reasonable effort is and how they have been made. It does not give the court the authority to make any affirmative order as to how the agency is to make those reasonable efforts, and especially how they are to expend their funds.
But I think his point is that it is unreasonable in this circumstance with a 21-year-old mother or guardian and living with her mother not to extend some support when they have a need to relocate and they need some money to do that.
And the agency would contend that it is not an abuse of discretion and it is reasonable. There was, when you review the full record in this case, there was no imminent danger to the child. The placement, the father had not broken into the home in many months and that issue had been resolved. The child had been the subject of one bullying incident on the playground. The placement was not going to disrupt, and that the family had been asking to move and for assistance in moving for several months prior to the CAP attorney making the request from the court.
Would you agree that we can, that a court can review the reasonableness of the provision of services or the non-provision?
Correct. The court can make a determination that the failure to provide this payment was unreasonable and find that the agency did not provide reasonable efforts, and that would affect the agency's funding. But the court cannot affirmatively order the agency to make this expenditure.
They direct, as my colleague suggested, that the agency do something to assist in moving this family.
I believe that that would be appropriate, and the court does that all the time. The court makes informal requests for the agency to assist, and the agency then goes and does its best efforts. In this case, the agency had already referred the family to community resources to go assist in possible relocation, and the family had not reached out to those. Instead, they had the attorney make the ask for a financial payment by the agency to the court. And in response to an earlier question, the court made a payment directly to the foster parent. It wasn't to the rental provider, it wasn't to a moving agency, anything like that. It was directly to the foster parent to do what they deemed appropriate, essentially, with the payment. There'd be no guarantee that it actually went for the court's intended purpose. And when we look at the court's orders in this case, the first order issued by the court that was drafted by the CAP attorney was completely devoid of any statutory authority or language as to how the court made the order. The court then made a further order on the motion for reconsideration, referring to 550 and 393. And I believe under 550 and 393, the court does not have the authority to make this order, and that the hearing was not held pursuant to those sections. It was held pursuant to the section regarding the initial determination of rights hearing, and the court had did not have the proper information in front of it, had no report from the agency. It did no fact finding to even be able to make a determination that this payment was appropriate, and the refusal was a abuse of discretion by the agency.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
All right, counsel.